Tonight it's my pleasure to welcome back to Many Rivers Books and Tea Anne Scott. She is the author of this brand new book that she will be talking about tonight. Lovely cover. Finding Home, Restoring the Sacred to Life Stories of Women in Homelessness and Transition. She's, of course, the founder of Dream Weather Foundation. She's a writer, a grandmother, has led workshops in diverse communities and organizations around the country and internationally. The core of her work is bringing feminine wisdom back into consciousness where it can heal and sustain life. She's also the author of Women, Wisdom, and Dreams, The Light of the Feminine Soul. Please join me in welcoming Anne Scott.
Thank you so much for coming out, helping to welcome this book into the world. It's been quite a few years, maybe 3 years, writing it. So, this evening is going to be really an evening of sharing. And I would like to share about the book, about how I came to it, about the work itself, about the stories of the women that I have encountered along with several other women here who joined me in this work, Ginny Matthews and Diana Badger and Jennifer part-time. then I will also invite Ginny and Diana to share if they feel to as we move on in the evening. So, this is really something very simple. It came from a dream. I didn't have any intention to write this book. And I had a dream about 4 years ago. And in the dream, I was instructed to write a book about how I work, how this work, particularly with women, how it works. And I didn't believe it. I didn't really want to write another book. And but basically the dream was saying, stop what you're doing, write the book. And so as often happens when I have a dream like that, a fair amount of doubt comes in. Was that really a literal dream? Was it a symbolic dream? I don't really have to write a book, or just going through that in my mind. But then subsequent dreams really showed me that there was a certain energy and something in my heart to do. And so I just started writing. Just started writing, gathering the stories of the women that I've been working with, that we had been working with for 5 years, almost 6 years. 5 years or 6 years. So it was really a journey. The first time I went to speak at a women's shelter for homeless women in homelessness, women in transition, I had already agreed and initiated a pilot program to see if this could work, to have meditation, to have a small circle of women come together, to listen to each other, to make a space for silence, for their heart, without really an agenda, just to create that space and see what would happen. And but I must say that that first night or first day that I went there, I was extremely nervous because it was a world, a field, a dimension that I really wasn't very familiar with. I just knew I was drawn to working with these women. And so I stood in front of 45 women in the meeting room at the living room, actually, in Santa Rosa. And it was extremely noisy, and everyone was talking, and finally the director shouted out, "Ladies, would you please be quiet?" And then, And then I thought, oh no, what am I going to do? I'm going to stand up there with my first book or my second book and say I can come here and we can meditate together. I really didn't know what to do. And then in a moment, it became very obvious that all I could do was be completely naked, completely vulnerable. I could only stand there and say, this is what I know, and this is what I've experienced with women from many cultures, women around the world. That women are, no matter what they've experienced, that they are sacred beings. And I told some stories. And when I said that women are sacred beings, something very astonishing happened in the room, which was people were still shifting and working on the computer, and the room went completely silent, absolutely total silence. And I stood there watching every single woman looking at me with eyes that I've never seen this before, where the eye opens to something so much deeper, like it was like life was looking through them. And I knew that these women had never been told that they were sacred, had never been honored in this particular way. I know there are many programs, and yes, there's due respect and creativity and many things, but somehow it never clicked that they were sacred beings. And so that total silence, that absolute stillness, to me was like a yes. This is something, there's something here. And one of the women who was working there said she'd never heard silence like that in the room. And so that gave me a certain encouragement and courage, really, to start these circles and see what would happen. And step by step, it was a process of discovery. Every time we held a circle, I started on my own, and then Ginny joined me, and then a little later another woman, and then Diana, and a few others. And it was like a discovery. Every time we met, we would see, oh, this is how it works. Oh, look what happens in the sacred space of silence, of sharing from the heart, of honoring women, of seeing their beauty even if they have never seen it themselves. And so I became drawn into this work more deeply. I've been working for many, many years, but not in this very practical dimension of homelessness. And so this is, the stories in this book really, they really reveal what happens when a door opens, when a door to grace, when a door to their hearts opens. And there's something quite tremendous that arises, not always, but mostly. And it's as if our work as facilitators is just to create the circle, just to be there in a circle, making sure that people are comfortable, that they know that they're not going to be judged, that they know that they're not going to be imposed upon in any way. And this feeling of spaciousness and freedom is not commonly known by these women. And so what happens in this space is that their hearts begin to open. They actually get in touch with some feeling, some deep wisdom, some knowledge or inner trust or knowing, even in the midst of a lot of difficulties. And I'm convinced, after doing this for so many years, that this is an essential component of helping the women get back into their lives. There's many other services that are also essential, but this particular component is vital, and it's not just with women in homelessness. It's just a vital link. And I got this feeling that in our culture and in our history, we've broken so many links. Life was interconnected, life was whole, life had these links that reached back eons. And because of our culture, because of the modern world, these links have been broken, and they've been broken inside us as well. And so we start seeking to get to find that again, to restore that link. And I see that that's what happens in these groups. Something links up in the women that has been fragmented so long, and it's right there. It's not like we have to work at it. We just hold this space, and then this deep wisdom arises. And to me, that was just astonishing at first. But I don't think I ever really got used to it or took it for granted, because there would always be this sense of wonder. And women would come from many different cultures. I didn't realize Santa Rosa was a container for many, many different cultures. And so we had women from Eritrea, from Haiti, from many from Mexico and South America, Latin America, and then many, many other women that grew up and lived here. A woman from Micronesia, and a woman from China, a woman from Vietnam. And I found this so moving, because I grew up living in many places around the world, and here was the world again, right here in Santa Rosa, just in these women who would sit with us. And and there were also Native American women that come and go. We have learned a tremendous amount. It's always been a blessing. It's rarely been like hard work. And so I see this as a model that can touch us in our own lives, in our own families, in our own communities, but also that it can maybe penetrate that consciousness that is need-based, evidence-based. That everything has to be evidence-based. You have to prove this and prove that, and statistical analysis to see, well, how many people come, and this is not that. Sometimes there were only two women. Sometimes there were 10 women. And it didn't matter. The energy was there, the women came. Typically the groups were 6 to 8. And so we worked in a few other shelters, and then I also went to Baton Rouge and was invited to work with a shelter there. And it was the same thing. And I saw this was real. It's very simple. And in the midst of all this, I had my own family crisis, which I won't go into detail, but it meant that I really was put to the test. You know, one can't do a certain type of work without being faced in your own life by the absolute rigors of what you share, what you aspire to publicly or with groups. And so this was very humbling for me, and brought me to the core of what this work is, which is not about fixing. It's not about fixing people. It's not about making them do something or making them better or anything like that. It's really about loving them. Loving them as they are and helping to create a space that is held by love. And so the suffering that I heard in the women, the cries, it's really like the, listening to the cries of the heart in the women that was not just here, but it represented what was going on globally. But I could also hear in my own, in the midst of my own family life, listening and having the strength to witness and not inwardly reject anything. And so at the deepest level, this is, I put this extra little title here, Restoring the Sacred to Life, the subtitle, because it really is to do with restoring the sacred to life in every circumstance, and it's always possible. And that is the healing factor, and it may not manifest outwardly, and it might, but that's really not our work, my work. It's to hold and honor that sacredness, which can look, I remember many years ago I had a dream that said, love is the sun and the darkness of the moon. And love is the sun and the darkness of the moon. And I saw that love has many, many, many aspects to it. And it can break open your heart. It can lift you up. It can bring you down into your being, into the ground. Love has its own wisdom, and that is the foundation of this work. And I believe that through these difficulties and through the challenges that really we're facing now, all of us, in different ways, but especially these women, there's a certain grace and strength that rises up that allows us to meet whatever it is. And it's really practical. And this is the beauty. I feel it was such a relief somewhere when, I don't know how it was for you, Ginny, when we first started, it was such a relief to be in a situation that was just on the ground. There was no fantasies or illusions about spiritual life. It was right there. And so I thought, all right, is this going to work? Is this going to hold a space for women? Is this going to help them in any way, in a real way? And we found that it did, time and time and time again. And so these stories are really a journey of showing how this works, but it's really, they're stories of life, and they're stories that I feel resonate with many, many people. So I'm going to read to you a little bit, and then we'll talk, and I'll ask Ginny and Diana to speak, and also welcome questions. What I found was that these women were not separate from life in any way, and they felt separate, they felt isolated, but in the group, in the circle, there was a connection. We were weaving all the time. Our hearts were being woven together, we were weaving together just by sitting together. So I'm just going to read to you a little bit. And so this is one of the practices that occurred to me early on was that because I'm a writer, I thought, well, why not have the women write? And just invite them to write, see what happens. And at one point when I was writing the book and I was getting a little stuck, I dreamt of somebody giving a group of women who were homeless, giving them pens and paper. And I knew that it's their voices that needed to come out. Their voices needed to be given space and brought out into the world, because nobody was listening to the deepest part of them. So this is an example of a writing practice. And this is from the book. Once there was a seed. We sit in circle, six women who are homeless and living in shelters, a colleague and myself. After a silent meditation, I offer a writing exercise that begins with the words, "Once there was a seed." A stillness settles in the room as the women concentrate on their writing. 10 minutes later, I invite the women to read aloud what they wrote. "I'll go," Carmen says. "I didn't know I could write like this." She reads aloud a story about a seed, quote, "watered by the rain and kept moist by the mist of the river." She doesn't realize that it's a story of the fundamental need to restore a sense of belonging. Another woman then speaks up to read her story. "It doesn't mean anything," she says. But her face glows as she begins to read of a neglected flower that turned into a beautiful flower. A story of trust in herself and in life. What touches me most is the wonder in the women's faces as they connect with their inner knowing and bring it into consciousness. As if a link that was broken becomes restored. It is always moving to witness this. But as I reflect on this linking up, this reconnection to what seemed lost, I'm reminded of the deep need of the sacred to be restored in each of our lives. Recently, you can see it's in her handwriting. Recently, a woman wrote this, and I must have said, "Once there was a stone," and as the prompt. So here's what she wrote. "Once there was a stone. It was heart-shaped with a glue-like line running through it. I felt it was indicative of my heart. The line seemed to me like glue. The glue kept my heart together and reminded me that my heart is not in two pieces, parentheses, broken. And though I had pain, my heart was still whole." So, I'll just read a little bit here and there. One of the things that we would do would be to have meditation. And this is some of the responses of the women. "The quiet and stillness helped me to focus on where I'm going, to be straight and direct, and not to go sideways and be distracted. For the first time, I was actually able to let my mind empty." These are different people. "Usually my mind goes into hyperdrive. This meditation was different. Peace, tranquility, patience were in abundance." And this is by a Native American mother of a 3-year-old and a 5-month-old. "I didn't understand what you meant by stillness, but then I realized that I had some kind of knowing. When I see the beauty of my children sleeping next to me, that is my stillness." So here's an example of some really practical aspect of these circles. Called "She Let Go and She Flew." In our circles, we hold an empty space. We do have some tools to help with this, especially with the group when the group needs focus. But on this day, I initiate the writing exercise, and after 6 minutes have passed, I wrap it up and ask if anyone wants to read what they wrote. Ginger says that she will read. But before she does, she tells us that she'll be moving into her daughter's house. Their relationship is healed. This is her last meeting with us, she says. She's been there for 2 years. During the writing exercise, she wrote out a poem that had come to her this morning while walking to the shelter from the bus stop. There was a bird learning to fly, afraid to fall, a voice from above. "You can do it," she heard. She let go and she flew. It just took one word of encouragement. She said that she had found a housemate and moved in an apartment. It was okay at first, but then he became loud and abusive. So these are her words. "I didn't know what to do and didn't have the strength to do anything. But then one night, I remembered the silent meditation I learned here. I sat in my room and grew very quiet. And then I realized what I needed to do, and I was able to leave." So there's many, many stories. But I think the one that I want to share right now that comes to mind is that when this young woman came from Micronesia and she couldn't speak English very well, but she came to our circle, I invited her in because she looked kind of lost in the room. And I said, "Why don't you come?" And she said, "Oh, no, my English is terrible." And I said, no, come, it doesn't matter. So she sat there and didn't say a word for the whole time, and except her name and that she's from Micronesia. And afterwards, everyone left, and she started walking out, and then she came back, and she said, "I want to talk to you." And she says, "What do you want from me?" And I was very startled when she asked this. And I said, "I don't want anything from you. Just what do you want from me?" And I said, "Nothing." And then I felt like we had only this minute or two. And I just had something in my own heart to tell her. And I said, "This is a very difficult culture to live in." Because she seemed very, very innocent somewhere, very naive to the ways of this country. I said, "You have a good heart. Please take care of it." And tears came to her eyes and she left. She came back a few weeks later and she shared a story about the dolphin's tail. And it was a story about how she used to swim with the dolphins in Micronesia. She lived on a little island, and she missed her family, and how she swam with these dolphins. And people in the group said, "In America, people spend so much money to swim with the dolphins, and you would do this every day?" And she was smiling. She could feel a certain warmth. And then the third time she came, she told me that she wouldn't be coming anymore because she got a job, and that she was praying a lot, and things started working, and she left a difficult relationship, which I feel was protecting her heart somehow. She had to leave. And so in the group, this was the last time, and we're sitting there. I usually go around the circle, "My name is so-and-so, and I'm here for some reason." She just looked at me and she said, "You know who I am." And then, that's all she said. And then at the end, she said, "You know who I am." And she left. And she said, "Thank you for welcoming me." And this story touches me so deeply because this is like a microcosm of what could be happening in this country and what we are struggling with nationally, of welcoming each other. And this process of welcoming is so deep. Orland Bishop, I don't know if you've heard of him, a very wise, beautiful man that works with young gang members in Los Angeles, and he makes peace with these young people. And he said that when people are not welcomed, or when the culture is not welcoming, people go to the very edges of culture. And so that's why this work is so simple. It's like a welcoming, and it to me it goes deeper and deeper. Not just these women here, but it's as if we're doing something that resonates and reverberates beyond this little circle. And now it really is reverberating because the stories are moving out, and there's been quite a good reception to the book, and so I'm really pleased that the voices of the women are now able to sing, really, able to sing out. And yeah, this book taught me a lot. The women have taught me a lot. And Diana, of course, edited the book, and that was also incredibly helpful because she forced me to write these reflections at the end of the stories. I said, no, I don't want myself in here. No, just the stories. And Diana's like, no, you have to share. What does it mean to you? And so in that process of writing the reflections, I had a few, but not many. Something came alive in me that became more deeper and more grounded as to how does this work? How does this work in a practical way? And so I'm grateful for that. So in the process, I'll just add that in the process, doing some radio interviews, some people have heard about this work and they have been mentored to do this work in their own communities, and I feel that will grow. And it's not that this is a program to be copied in any way. It's really just an inspiration that this can work, and it did work. And I hope that this is like a seed itself to help anyone working in communities, and especially with women, vulnerable women. That it actually shows the demonstration. This is real. So I wonder if Ginny or Diana has anything to share. They both. This is not something that I do alone. What I found early on is that the work of holding is really key to our work. Holding space, and to be there alone, it's not necessarily easy to hold the space and to be engaged in talking and the occasional disruptions and making sure that there's a real respect for the circle. And so it was just so valuable when Ginny joined me to hold that space, and so we do work in pairs.
Well, I was going to share about holding space.
Yes.
Because I experienced it on a big scale when way back in the early 80s, I went to a program of Stephen Levine with his wife, Andrea Levine. There were a thousand people there. And Andrea just sat there. And at one point, Stephen says, "If you think Andrea is not doing anything, you are sadly mistaken." And I experienced how she held the space. Many people, you know, Stephen Levine deals with difficult healing issues, and that was coming out. And I saw how this woman was really holding the space. So I had an example of what that was. and a 40-year meditation practice of not rejecting what arises and not necessarily affirming what arises was helpful in holding space with these women, because it sometimes was charged. And I must say, I felt supported. I mean, it's a little, we've just moved to a new place, and I realized I felt supported as a space holder in the old place, because there was so much beauty, there were trees, there were flowers, and there was a space that had done Christian practice for many, many, many years, and I felt that support. I felt that support when I went into meditation, and I'm holding the space. I'm really struggling at this new place because I don't feel supported at all energetically. Mm-hmm. So it's been very difficult and very draining. I actually came home today and probably got sick because it was just too difficult for me to hold the space in that environment. And it could have something to do with my age. but beauty was another thing that we tried to bring in for the women. Mm-hmm. We would bring beautiful photographs of nature. And that seemed, you know, a very important aspect of opening the heart. We'd bring flowers or beautiful scarves, just something to that the eye could rest with. And so I found that was part of the circle. Mm-hmm. It was trying to bring in something of beauty. And I found holding the space for these women just amazingly enriching. And because I wasn't holding it for them, we were holding it together. And I felt like when women reached the bottom, which is where many of these women are, there was nothing left to protect. They could open their hearts in a way that those of us who have status and money and position, we spend a lot of time protecting that or guarding that. And these women didn't have that. So they were really, I was always amazed at how quickly the energy could move and how quickly the heart could open, because there wasn't a lot of defending. Mm-hmm. And that was very special.
I was reflecting while you were talking that we have had challenges at both sites where it was for 5 years at a church site in Santa Rosa, and now it's at another site down on the highway. At both sites, we were sometimes homeless ourselves in not knowing what room we were going to be allowed to lead the group in. Sometimes they would bounce us around from one room to the other, or I would arrive and find out there was no room available, or we had to wait 10 or 15 minutes before it would be available. One time the door handle had been removed and that nobody had the lock. Somehow the handle was removed, but it was still locked. So we've had to do our own journey a bit about adjusting as if we were homeless and put up with noises being adjacent to the playground and adjacent to the kitchen. This is the old site. And in the new site, now we're in the resource room, which is where they have computers and telephones. So I guess I'm just reflecting on some level we're being asked to practice what we're bringing to the women, which is to find our home inside and be grounded despite the outer distractions. I was with Ginny today leading the group, and I didn't feel that I couldn't access the energy, and I felt it was a good experience. So it just shows, you know, we're all doing the work in different ways, mm-hmm. holding the energy, and there's definitely change and those challenging. So we're just 1 month into being at a new site, I think, or 5 or 6 weeks. A lot of adjusting. We have to ask the women to leave who are at the computer in order to do this completely other practice. And we also, you know, there's some women who actually are on staff who aren't so sure what this meditation thing is about. better benefit is from putting together their resume and making sure we find new housing for them. But we're convinced that it all goes together and that they're going to be able to show up for the next phase of their life and find their own center, their own home. So I consider it a great privilege to be in there witnessing their strength and courage and receptivity to this practice that we're bringing to them. Many of them don't come at it with, oh, I want to do a spiritual practice the way, you know, these people do. So that they come in and they're just open and they're touched. And that is so incredibly touching to us to see how deeply and quickly they get touched by what's present, by love and connection and just being able to even hang in there, even being able to sit still for an hour for some of them is a huge accomplishment. There's one woman who came today, it was like, I think her third or fourth time, and the first time she came, she told me, I really want to come, but I can't stay in a group for a whole hour. That's way too challenging for me. I get nervous, I get restless. And I said, it's fine if you need to leave. She knew she had some permission to leave and not feel bad, so she did that a few times, and today she sat through the whole time, and I knew that this was sort of a breakthrough for her, and it's just such a, she didn't want to talk because she's too shy to talk, she'll say her name, but she doesn't want to share. And we try to make it really available for women to share or not share, whatever works for them. But there have been some women who keep coming back and whose lives have definitely changed for the better. So while it's not about an outcome and it's not about fixing them, some women do step into really amazing transformations in their lives. And others get a taste, and I'm sure it goes in and nourishes them in whatever way they need it.
Some of the times that I really just smile at is when a woman has come in and she's really resistant. She's only there because someone told her to go in there. And or they'll say something like, well, I hope this isn't one of those places where you have to be positive, because it doesn't work. And so I said, no, you don't. Just be yourself. And then she finds out this is not about imposing on the women. It's about being together. It's about listening. It's about accepting who they are. And witnessing their beauty, really. But I've seen numerous experiences, both here and in Baton Rouge, where the women never, ever had sat still their whole lives. And this is our culture. Never sit still your whole life. And when they sit, and they go into no more than 7-minute meditation, we never do it longer than that, maybe 10. And the meditation is over, and their eyes are wide, and they said, what was that? And they touch something in themselves that has been waiting for so long. It might be peace, or stillness, or it might be an image, or it might be just this feeling of not having anxiety, but just settledness. And this is just, it's amazing to me that something so simple can have a huge difference on these lives. So I'll just read a little bit from the first chapter. See. I don't think I'll read most of it. I'll just share it with you. But really, this is also connected to the earth. It's also connected to all of life, but also the earth. And many women are in touch with the cry of the earth. They feel it themselves. And somehow, an experience that I had many years ago, prior to this work, I feel is connected deeply, and that is that I'd been camping up in the Sierras, and I took a walk while my husband was doing something, and it was early in the morning, and I wasn't really thinking of anything, just enjoying the peace of the forest. And then I noticed that the trees were dying. A lot of the fir trees, the pine trees, were dying. And then something just opened up in me, and I found myself on my knees, crying. It was not personal. It was like the earth, feeling the sorrow of the earth, how the earth had not been considered sacred in this area. And these tears came, and tears, and then I didn't know what to do. It was such an overwhelming feeling. And then I realized that I could sing. And so I sang the lullabies that I sang to my kids when they were little. And I just started singing. And I found such a quietness after all that. Oh, it was like teeming. I had never had the experience like that. And then suddenly it was peaceful. My tears were not needed. My song was needed. And then my silence was needed. And it felt like the space was just made. There was some healing that took place. And in me, certainly, but it felt like it spread a little bit beyond into the. I felt like the earth had heard at some level. And then I walked back to the tent, and I got a migraine, which I rarely get and I have not had for years. But what happened is that I can't see. And so I stumbled to the tent. I found my way. I had to walk for about 5 minutes squinting, and then I found my way, and I lay down immediately and just went fast asleep. And as I was waking up out of this deep state, I saw an image that I can't even say an image. It felt very alive. And it was of a Native American man moving toward me at great speed, giving me a staff with a feather on it, and then disappearing back in the darkness. And when those little things happen, they go underneath the rational world where we live most of the time, and you could almost forget about it and deny it, but it was real. And so it was about a year later that I shared it with someone. I didn't talk about it to anyone, and it was to a Native American woman who was doing some work with us. And I asked her about it, and I said, what was that? And she said, you honored them, so they honored you. And I felt like it was a kind of blessing to be able to work with women, because women are so closely connected to the earth, and women of many cultures. And so this gave me the confidence to just follow step by step without knowing very much what the next step would look like. And so I'll just read the last paragraph of that. Just as the earth needs healing, I feel strongly the need for women to heal and bring forth the light that is hidden within them. The qualities that the women's circle awaken are not valued in our culture, the tremendous power they bear. Listening, beauty, stillness, attention, holding, space, longing, healing, and belonging. Each are facets of the sacred, and we need them. So, questions?
I just wonder if the three of you would like to go to Orlando.
To Orlando. Oh my gosh.
Throw that out there as the question that had to be spoken but not answered. Thank you, though,
for the work you guys are doing.
And I'd like to also mention Nancy's doing work there that faithfully for many, many years. How many years?
Over 20 in different ways. I've been connected with somebody who has been supporting her more recently with our therapy program here. Rich.
Could you talk a little while?
And very kindly mentioned my involvement with the living room. And I've been a longtime supporter and grant writer once, and now an advocate for it. I've led some art groups for a number of years there, and it developed into a more formal art therapy program with expressive art therapists as well. And speaks of the circle and that space. The art is also experienced, led in a circle. And it's that sharing, space of sharing, where there is a place where of connection and of women being able to express aspects of themselves and their lives through their artwork. That's a safe space. And I love what you say about a space where there's not fixing. Mm-hmm. And the art is offered in it's art making, but it's also, a friend of mine talks about it as connected to the soul. So, I think what you've recorded and allowed to come forth is it reminds me and others of how I think it takes this articulation of the sacred and the spirit and the individualism that is not honored enough. I don't want to speak in negatives, but in our civil discourse, people don't have the courage or audacity to state that we are living beings, sacred, and to own that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that takes courage and a leader such as yourself. A spiritual leader to establish that, and I think we need it. It's the basis of our civil discourse and respect for one another, too.
So. As you were speaking, I remembered in the dream that I had to write the book, I was given a title, which is not the title of the book, but the title is called The Clan of Teachers. And I see that all the time, that we sit as equals, that we each have something to give, we each have something to share, no matter what has happened to us. And in a way that's different from the hierarchical, we're here to help you do this and do that and get a job and this and that, which is all good, but this is also broadening the base. And I thought it was a great title, but I think nobody would understand it, so finding home is right there. So does anyone have questions?
I have a comment, and yeah. I want to really commend you for that idea of this isn't a program, mm-hmm. that it's a model. Years ago, when I first started working as a midwife, we did groups and circles and found incredible power in that. And fast forward, in recent years, there was someone that started, I won't give the title out to, but they started this group process, prenatal care, and gave it a name and trademarked it. And it continues to bother me in the depths of my soul, because that, the wisdom is, like you said, we all have wisdom to share.
Mm-hmm.
And for people to market something, and to, it's like taking from people instead of support and honoring and saying you two are sacred. And one of the things that I bring up to people in the birthing circle sometimes is, you know, we have privileged information, but we're not meant to have it as a privilege. We're meant to share it, and that's what has to happen more. And I think the times you, I mean, for women to get in a circle, I mean, I did a movement group at a shelter on the Navajo reservation. It's powerful, you know, and seeing other things. And I think that what you're bringing forward is a reminder for us to really look at how powerful that is, and to use it more, and
mm-hmm.
support each other some more. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it's exciting to be here and to be witness to your sharing.
I feel compelled. I'm very happy to be here. I admire your work very much, and I support this idea, and I feel compelled to add in a understanding I have of the word simple. You use the word simple several times because simple comes to the I got this from an architectural book. The simplicity is complexity resolved.
it's not simple at all.
It's complexity resolved. And you said before, I'm having resolved a lot of complexity. And I said,
thank you.
One of my favorite prayers is, thank you, silence, for making a place where words can live. Thank you, words, for making a way for hearts to speak. Something that was coming to me while you were talking is that space is alive. Space is alive. And you mentioned architecture. I think architecturally, we have an inclination to exploit space, to dominate it, and not to partner with it. And that welcoming, I think space is naturally welcoming, but according to how we relate with it, we can cut ourselves off from receiving that welcome. And when we're not receiving the welcome of space, we don't feel like we belong.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed you have a very welcoming tone.
Yeah.
And so just sitting here with you and listening to you, you naturally feel welcome. I'm going to do the same thing as you want to say welcome and
thank you.
Back to you.
Thank you.
But yes, well, it just came to me while you that space is alive, and I'm still sitting with that.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of that basking.
One more story that comes to mind, and then I think we'll probably close. This was when Ginny and I were at another shelter. We're just doing a 8-week program or 6-week program. This is a little bit about space. When I got there, unlike other circles, as the women sat there and I walked in, there was a huge wall of resistance. I could feel it. I couldn't penetrate it. I didn't understand it, didn't know why it was there. I'd never experienced that before in any other shelter, in any other group. And so I just started talking about my life a little bit and started settling, maybe a bit. We had the meditation, and then this is how the space works. Very slowly, the women began to relax and open that wall, and it really was a wall, just started to melt. And I remember one woman there was the social worker that was overseeing it just to see what it was like. And she didn't say a word the whole time. And then finally at the very end, and the atmosphere had already changed, she said, and she was sharing in front of the women who she's like the head of the house, basically. And so she had to hold a certain authority. But she became very vulnerable in that moment, and she said in meditation, I saw, because images sometimes come to the women, I saw a shaft of gold wheat, like real gold, like gold. And she was so touched by this. She said that she had been homeless herself many years ago and then became a social worker. And in the last 5 years, she had many, many losses of lives in her family. And somehow this shaft of gold wheat rose up out of the depths of her meditation. And it touched her so deeply. And so I said, do you know what it means? And I said, do you want to know what it means? Or do you know what it means? And she said, yes, she does know. And so we never spoke about it, but it touched everyone. It was like, you know, wheat is nourishment. And gold is the very quality that's in each of us. And especially in the women, there's always this gold, no matter what happens, no matter what they've experienced or what difficulties they faced, there's this gold. And so she found this deep, pure nourishment that rose up from her depths. And it touched everyone there. Absolutely every woman there. And there was this quality of joy from the beginning where there was just this tremendous resistance, and then there was this joy. And so we had a minute's silence at the end, which we often do. And in the silence, I saw, there were six women there that day. I saw six, there's an image that just came to me. Six little potted plants, the kind that you get at the nursery. They were ready to be planted, and there were little blue flowers. And they were just sitting there, ready to be planted, and I felt, I didn't say anything, but I felt that there was a certain quality of devotion that was touched that day, and that it was time to be planted in the earth. And my hope is that in some way these women will have planted that in their own lives. We don't know, but still there's this mysterious undercurrent going on, and this is what I've always trusted, to hear that silent undercurrent saying yes, this is for life, and this is for the sacred. So I just share that because it was really a touching moment for me to hear that. So thank you. That's really all I have to share. I'm so grateful you came. And it just feels like a celebration to bring this out in the open. You know, these stories, this knowledge of who we are and why we are being called to live this. So, all of us. So thank you. And I think you wanted to say something.
Well, first I want to thank you on behalf of Many Rivers, and please join me in thanking you. Thanks. And as many, perhaps not all, but many of you know, we have a donation bowl over on the counter. We encourage you to contribute to it. We share half with our speakers to further their work and retain half to maintain this space for further such events. And of course, I will remind you that we have many copies of Finding Home here for your consideration on your way out the door, and also some schedules for the upcoming events that I mentioned earlier. So thank you so much for coming to Many Rivers Books. Indeed, come back and visit us when you can actually get the books as well. And thank you again.
Thank you both. Okay. Beautiful space.
Thank you.